Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Vallabha Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Brajajanaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jamana Tiravana Chadi Avana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Madhava Kunjabi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Nandana Brajajanaranjana Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Brajajanaran Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Tira Vanachadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Acharya Astatarasata Si Simad His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Dantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Continuing this morning with Canto 10, Chapter 38, and we're just discussing the first. There's only one little section left, Mathura, heading for Vrindavan. Very much eager to see Krishna. And this last section is it's commentary, verse and Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary, a verse from Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Nityananda, who appeared in Ekachakra in his childhood, knew all about Krishna and Balaram's pastime because he's Balaram. And with the boys his age in Ekachakra, all day long they would play, just like the boys in Vrindavan, the gopas, would play in different ways. So they he, Balaram, Nityananda, would be the principal actor and the director and the script writer, and he'd orchestrate the children's playing, and they were very happy to play with him. So here's Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Kanda, chapter 9, text 35. Another day, one boy dressed as a Kura and took Krishna and Balaram to Kamsa's capital. And the commentary, this is Bhaktisiddhanta. Regarding a Kura bringing Balaram and Krishna to Mathura on the order of Kamsa, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36, which is prior to Chapter 38, says, please, this is Kamsa asking, not directing, asking politely, please, go to Nanda's village where the two sons of Anakundundubi are living. Anakundundubi is the name of Vasudev, Krishna's father. So he's revealing that he knows that these are sons of Vasudev, who is in prison. And without delay, bring them here on this chariot. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital, unquote. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, this yesterday morning's and this morning's verse, the first of chapter 38, after passing the night in the city of Mathura, the high-minded Akrura mounted his chariot and set off for the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. So now we're continuing text 2. It's a really nice section, really nice section. As he traveled on the road, the great soul Akrura felt tremendous devotion. Tremendous devotion. Param Bhaktim. For the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, and thus he began to consider as follows. No BBT commentary, but here's Jiva Goswami writing. This verse describes Akura's devotion, Mahamatihi, mentioned in the previous verse. He began thinking. His thoughts continue until verse 24. There's 22 verses of his thoughts about Krishna. He began thinking, quote, that's coming up, text 3, what type of good acts have I done so that even a person like me can see the Lord? He thought in this way since he had the good fortune of getting Krishna's mercy, Mahabhaga, mentioned in this verse. His bhakti was the highest because it was his bhakti for the Lord who revealed his unlimited powers, Bhagavati, and revealed his great sweetness, such as his lotus eyes. Ambu Jake Shane Akura had a realization of Krishna in this form. Remember, he hadn't seen him yet. He'd only, like us, he had heard about him, and he's envisioning Krishna's form. Sanatan Goswami writes, how did he travel? The description continues till verse 23, although the other says 24. While traveling on the road, he thought as follows, because he was very fortunate, Mahabhaga, he easily attained upagataha, intense devotion to the Lord, who displays his unlimited powers. He had natural bhakti, just as heat is natural to fire. He could attain the highest bhakti because the object was the most beautiful, Ambujekshana. Because he had great bhakti, which manifested at this time, he went now to Gokula, text 3. So here's his first contemplation. Sri Akura thought, what pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities undergone? What worship performed or charity given so that today I will see Lord Keshava? So there are four items mentioned. You will hear in the commentary. They're lesser to greater in significance. As far as bhakti is concerned, pious deeds, severe austerities, worship, charity. And then, of course, there's transcendental charity. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, Akura happily reflected in great bliss, what have I possibly done by which I have been qualified to see the Lord? That was Vishwanath. And Jiva Goswami writes, a little technical, Akura began thinking while displaying various Sanchari Bhavas. So this is the technical part. What's a Sanchari Bhava? It's defined by Prabhupada as continuously existing ecstasies. So he was displaying Sanchari Bhavas. We'll circle back in a moment. Until the 23rd verse, he speaks joyfully while questioning. So, joyfully, the parentheses is harsha, harsha. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse describing Radharani, who has all 33 Sanchari Bhavas, and they're manifesting differently all the time, but she is the possessor of all 33. And the definition given there of Harsha is jubilation in natural love. So that's Radharani, Harsha. You know, the Bhagavad Gita meaning is, you know, happiness and distress, harsha shoka, harsha, happiness. But in Sanchari Bhava, it's more than happiness. It's a continuously existing ecstasy in jubilation, in natural love. So Jiva Goswami has rendered it as joyfully, but it's more than joyfully. It's a continuously existing ecstasy of jubilation in natural love. And the second, Jiva Goswami refers to vitarka. Vitarka means argument. So vitarka is like big argument. So Radharani would argue with Krishna. And it was this, that doing that is a Sanchari Bhav. Now, the list that's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Radharani, it calls those, there's 33, is not Sanchari Bhavs, correcting myself, it's Vyabhachari Bhavas. So what's the difference? According to Rupa Goswami's teaching and our Acharya's explanation, of Vyabhachari is a bodily symptom of ecstasy. And when that bodily symptom of ecstasy becomes sustained over time, then it gives is given a different name. That's Sanchari Bhava. That's continuously existing ecstasy. So it's like a description of waves, where you're in an ocean or something, a lake or a river or an ocean, and there's waves that are rising, and some waves seem to rise and stay, and some waves rise and subside and rise and subside, and then other waves intersect with those waves, and then there's some, you know, action of the waves crashing with another wave and so forth. Using that metaphor, it's the metaphor of an ocean, and bhakti rasa is a combination of various bhavas mixing, and particularly nourishing one of the primary, we say primary rasas, but it's thai bhava, little nectar devotion class this morning, or part of it. So sthayi bhava is compared to an axle that has wheels on the axle, and then there's things that turn the axle. So the axle is the foundation, and then there's things that turn the axle. And when the axle, the sthayi bhava, is turned, it becomes rasa. And the things that turn the axle are these various bhavas. And so bhavas mixing with sthayi bhava, the steady ecstasy, sthayi bhava, steady ecstasy. So there are different bhavas that move that sthayi bhava and thus create rasa. So back to our text here. Akura, according to Jiva Goswami, Akura began thinking while displaying various Sanchari Bhavas, continuous ecstasies. He mentions two. This is Harsha and Vitarka, which are Vyabhachari Bhavas, but he is the whole ride. I mean, we mentioned this yesterday. It says he left in the morning and he arrived in the evening. And it doesn't take all day to go from Mathura to Vrindavan, especially when you have like a limousine. He's got like a really spiffy chariot. According to some commentary, it says it was a brand new. Kamsa was thinking, as people sometimes think, he will become flattered and more enthused to accept this service if it's like a brand new Rolls Royce, or, you know, whatever, you know, like really opulent, new, never used by anybody, and fantastic horses, and he'll be, you know, I want to get on that chariot and go. Thinking like Kamsa thinks, materialistic person thinks, like themselves. Atmavan Manyate Jagat. So it was a really swift chariot. It took him all day. So he's involved. He's so absorbed in his thinking. He's anticipating meeting Krishna. And when you visit Vrindavan, I encourage, as you're approaching Vrindavan or prior to getting there or something, you read these prayers, which are Akura's contemplations of meeting Krishna. He's in the chariot, and we're getting an inside picture of his thoughts. Compliments of Shukadeva Goswami and compliments of Vyasadeva. They have this capacity to know the thoughts of others, even remotely. And his contemplation is a very highly stimulated, ecstatic love for Krishna. And he's on the platform of prema, and his primary relationship with Krishna is being stimulated like anything by his contemplating about Krishna and the meeting of Krishna. And we'll hear a whole number of verses of his contemplations. Then the next paragraph, again it's Jiva Goswami. What supreme good acts among all worship of the Lord, and what supreme vows for the Lord, tapaha, did I perform? The order of superiority is, from lower to higher, worship, vows, and giving or charity. Because of those acts, I will see the Lord of Brahma and Shiva, who rarely see him, and I will see him today. The charity, dattam, was to suitable candidates, to great devotees, to a person worthy of worship. Because of this alone, I will see the Lord. Though I am most fallen, I performed all these acts. Sanatana Goswami writes, his thoughts are revealed. This continues until verse 23. What pious acts, like sacrifices, did I do? What actions giving fearlessness to all beings did I perform? Taptam. What actions without pride or desire did I do? Or what meditation on the Lord did I do? Paramam tapaha. Paramam can modify all the words. Quote, but without doubt, but without great mercy, this is not possible. So he starts to modify that thought, that contemplation. He's arguing with himself, and so he's defeating the first argument or contemplation. Thinking in this way, he tries to think of another alternative. Kimba. It must have been from charity, datam, or it could not be charity either. The list of items is in order of increasing excellence. Because of this, I will see the original person, Keshavam, who killed Keshi today. We heard there's a standard meaning of the word Keshava. It has to do with Krishna's hair. Or Keshava, he's the killer of the Keshi demon, which happened in the morning, that very same day that he's traveling. So somehow he knew that Krishna killed Keshi in the morning as he's on his chariot going to Vrindavan. Last short paragraph. What did I do? I am most fallen. I must have done something. Otherwise, I could not see the Lord today. Or, I have done nothing. One cannot see the Lord by charity, etc. Why am I able to see the Lord today? So, this kind of questioning, we'll go back to the Jiva Goswami's comment. He's not just, you know, getting mental. He's meditating on Krishna. It's a Krishna meditation. And in his meditation, we can also do meditation. In his meditation, he's anticipating meeting Krishna. So we may not be on a chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan, but we may also want to meditate on meeting Krishna. You can meditate on meeting Krishna through the holy name. You can meditate on when will that day come, like our festival of the holy name. That's the yearning. And yearning is in relation to Krishna, is bhakti. It's a stage of bhakti. And it leads to the fruition of that yearning. But you have to begin somewhere, so yearning. And then it's not casual. It's very intense. And, what's the qualification through, let's just take chanting the holy name to have an experience of our relationship with Krishna. through the medium of chanting the holy name. Well, reality is we're really far from that. And what qualification do I have to have that good fortune? Nonetheless, eagerness. So what he's doing here is taking stock. This is self-introspection. He's not perhaps maybe going to meet Krishna. He's going to meet Krishna. And what's my good fortune? This good fortune question comes up several times. One of the places it comes up is towards the end of chapter 8, where in ecstasy, chapter 11, in ecstasy, chapter 11, in ecstasy, Shukadeva Goswami, having narrated Krishna's childhood pastimes and describing the kind of love that Yashoda and Nanda have for Krishna, he just kind of stops the narration and goes off into this ecstatic expression of how fortunate are these two. And hearing his ecstatic outburst and feeling transcendental stimulated feelings all himself, Maharishi Parikshit asks, what activities have these two done to be entitled for such intense love for Krishna? And then at the end of chapter 11 is this description, the answer given by Shukadeva Goswami, is Drona and Dara, who from the heavenly planets, as expansions of the eternal Nanda and Yashoda, they are contemplating having the personality of Godhead as their son. They approach Brahma, who gives them the benediction, yes, you just take birth on earth and you'll become the parents of the personality of Godhead. So they do that, and then it's explained their expansions from the heavenly planets enter into the eternal Nanda and Yashoda. So Nanda and Yashoda are eternal Nanda and Yashoda plus expansions of themselves in the forms of Drona and Dara. And then at the beginning of chapter 12, I hope I have it right. No, I don't have it right. It's chapter 9. The explanation is given. Actually, Nanda and Yashoda are eternally Nanda and Yashoda. So that was at the end of chapter 8. They're eternally Nanda and Yashoda because you can't become Nanda and Yashoda. You can't do something to become Nanda Maharaj. You can become an associate or an assistant or a devoted servant of, including in the mood of parental affection, not just the servant of Nanda, but parental affection person in the spiritual world, by being a follower of Nanda or by being a follower of Mother Yashoda. One can become one of Mother Yashoda's dear friends in motherly affection towards Krishna. But the question is, bringing this up, because the question is, it's kind of a natural question. How to come to such an exalted position? And later the same question is asked about the cowherd boys, and then it's expanded, not just the cowherd boys, Krita Punya Punja, that verse. What amount of lifetimes of pious activities, punya. So there are Krishna's eternal associates, cowherd boys and everybody else, and there are persons who become eligible for the association of those Nityasiddha devotees, and that's by the process of bhakti, and specifically raga nuga bhakti, by following those perfected souls. And there's a whole description of that process. One may come to that position. That is to say, in Krishna's pastimes, there are his eternal associates, Nityasiddha devotees, and there are those that are apprentices, so to speak, the sadhana siddha devotees being trained up by the Nityasiddha devotees. We hear this again and again being described. And they participate in Krishna's pastimes without some pecking order of, we're Nityasiddhas and you guys are over there, you're not Nityasiddhas. So it's nothing like that. But they're getting the association. So one may have undergone not only Cowherd Boys, but any of the other associates of Krishna. One may get the association of Krishna in this way. But so Akura is asking the same question. In his case, it's just seeing the personality of Godhead. And before he sees the personality of Godhead, he sees his footprints in the soft sand of Vrindavan and loses it. Then he sees Krishna, then he loses it again, and so forth. The chapter is filled with really wonderful ecstatic expressions, but we're getting the inside picture of Akura's Manmana, his contemplations in continuous ecstatic expressions arising from that contemplation, which is just part of his very elevated bhakti. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion on this nice topic. I'm really looking forward to this chapter. It's verse after verse after verse after verse after verse. 22 verses of ecstatic contemplation. Maybe we'll be thinking of Krishna more after hearing Akura's contemplations. Chant better japa, anticipating meeting Krishna. Go ahead, Karunanidhi. You're on. Speak. Take your earphones out.
Maharaj, can you please explain again regarding the Sthayi Bhava? You said it is like an axle in a wheel. But when it mixes, what I could not catch.
Couldn't follow. Oh. You know what a car is. And besides the drive shaft, there's four wheels. And those four wheels have two axles, front and back. And there's the wheels turn, and thus the axle turns. Now, with a car, it's not the same as, you know, but the drive shaft turns the axle that turns the wheels. So, leave the drive shaft out. Just the axle, that's Sthayi Bhava. Steady ecstasy. That's the meaning. And the steady ecstasy turns when various other bhavas are turning it. The principle is alambana. And you know what that is, right? The object of love and the abode of love, the two, ashraya and vishaya. So that stimulates the Sthayi Bhava. And then ecstasies arise, and so that mixing of different ecstasies, that's rasa. But it starts with an axle. It starts with Saibaba. And there are five primary Saibabas, which we commonly say five primary rasas. But then there's varieties within those rasas, depending upon the various bhavas that are nourishing, use that word, nourishing the primary ecstasy, the steady ecstasy, the Saibaba. Is that all right?
So for my understanding, that means you said Saibaba is for all five primary ones.
There are five primary rasas. You can also say there's five Saibhavas. Because the rasa, it becomes rasa when the Saibhava is stimulated and nourished.
Then Mahaj, another thing you said regarding, you read about Sanchari Bhava is greater than Abhachari Bhava.
Say it again. Well, it's not greater, it's just a different, there's a wave that stays up. There's a wave that may go up higher, but not stay up. It's just different. Vyabhachari are those 33, and stai means it stays up. Continuous ecstasy. Okay?
Thing is that a common question.
What?
One common question.
One more question.
Yeah, that Akrura has not seen Krishna so far, but how could he develop this type of bhava, which is super excellence, that even Radharani, what Radharani has, and how could Akrura could be able to get those type of bhavas?
Yeah. No, he doesn't have the same quantity or quality. She has everything in full, and he had enough. All right? It's the anticipation. That's ecstatic. So we don't have to, for you to feel ecstatic, you don't have to see Krishna. You have to anticipate seeing Krishna and hearing about Krishna and remembering Krishna and becoming absorbed in Krishna thought. And then you will experience ecstasies. Not the same as Radharani. Little. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, Akrura's blissful state, absorbed in intense devotion, is in such stark contrast to the emotions that are to come for the Vrajvasis from the mission that Akrura is on.
Yeah.
And a devotee is always concerned about how his mission, albeit on behalf of the Lord, affects the other devotees. So how does a pure...
That was her question. That was Krishnarjuna's question yesterday. He's going to make them really unhappy. He's going to be a target for ill will. So her question yesterday was he thinking about that? Was he contemplating the consequences of his action upon these lovely, exalted Vrijvasis? That was your question. That's your question.
My question is, how does such a pure soul as Akrura internally reconcile, when he knows that devastating consequences are to come for the devotees, and yet I have a mission to carry out in service to the Lord?
Well, we don't know how Akrura reconciled, which is, we acquire... To answer that question, we require somebody that knows his heart. So we don't. So it's really the practical application is how do we reconcile when we're doing something that's a service focus And there are others that are going to be perhaps negatively impacted by that service. How do we process that? Well, one of my favorite discussions from Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly that. Specifically, at the end of the kind of like the introductory section to Srimad Bhagavatam, which ends with Vyasadeva's realization under Narada's instruction, and now he's ready to compile Srimad Bhagavatam, and he does, and Sukadeva Goswami learns, and wait a minute, he's already Brahman realized, so even Atmarama, so the top, because he's appreciating topics of the personality of Godhead. So the sages then say, it's a new section, Krishna Katha, tell us some topics. And the first topic is this one. It's about the Pandavas, which is Krishna Katha because it's in relation to Krishna. And the end of the chapter 7 is Arjuna has this dilemma of he's taken a vow, and his wife, for whom he's taken the vow, says, I release you from the vow. And Yudhisthira says, yes, don't kill him. And then Bhima says, kill him. And Krishna says different things. He says, kill him, but he also says, this is not Brahmahatya. You're not killing a Brahmin because he's not a Jujabandhu. So there's no sin. Now, there he is. And so the consideration that we're hearing, read it carefully, extracting from that scene is relevant to us. The application is a mature stage of bhakti. Krishna wanted to show how elevated was Arjuna because he knew what Krishna wanted. Even Krishna was saying, kill him. He knew what Krishna wanted. And Draupadi was considering, I don't want Kripi to have to suffer as I've suffered. She lost her husband. At least I have husband. And she has no husband. So I don't want her to suffer. So if you kill, then she'll suffer. Others will undergo a tribulation they shouldn't undergo. So how do you... Mature is to understand not only what is to be done, but how others will be affected by that service. Immature doesn't consider blinders. I've got a service. Look out, here I come. However, you know, whoever, doesn't matter. I've just got a service to do. Look out, here I come. And some people are like that. And there's, you know, it's just immature. I mean, one way of looking at it is, you can say it's harmful. They shouldn't do. But their, you know, their intention, and there seems to be some even instruction to do. So mature is we consider. You know, we're not mature. Or we're becoming a little bit mature. In the course of becoming mature, we're going to not always factor, and not always factor properly. Who is going to be affected by this service? And how do I adjust things so that others won't be adversely affected unnecessarily? There's some things that just have their consequences, and you perform. But the contemplation of who will be affected adversely, potentially, needs to be considered. And we're not so intelligent, we're not so refined, we're not so cultured, we're not so Krishna conscious. But that exercise of that mature impact of this devotional service upon others, it needs to be considered. You know, there's no cookie cutter answer to that question other than bhakti. You look to Krishna and you pray to Krishna how to do this, how, and then Krishna gives intelligence according to our capacity. And a very cultured person knows how. And an uncultured person doesn't even think about it. Okay?
And even though we have an intention to serve, there's just so much baggage going on for us, you know, from our conditioning. And there's so many subtle things that, you know, just constantly affecting us that, you know, even though the intention is there, it's really not pure service, so it becomes very complicated.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's not, but it's like your children may make a drawing of Radha Krishna or Lord Chaitanya or something, and then practice and practice and practice and practice, and it becomes more refined and more refined. So, but you know, when is that crude drawing of Radha Krishna or Lord Chaitanya? That's Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya accepts the devotion. So intention is an essential operative principle in bhakti. And then the subtleties make one's life beautiful or decorated. And Krishna is the decorator. If we stay with it, not just, you know, I want to please Krishna and I don't care about subtleties, or I don't care about culture. I've got a service. Look out. Here I come. Anyone else?
Sometimes it's mentioned the demigods have come down to play with Krishna. How fortunate even that the demigods have come to engage in Krishna's pastimes. So I was just curious a little deeper about that, because my understanding was that for most of the demigods, they have a different, it may not be on the level of pure devotion because they have mixed managerial affairs. I understand.
It's not just the managerial affairs, it's their maturity of devotion.
I understand, like sadhakas who have reached that stage of perfection, then they can enter in and engage in Krishna's pastimes. But Bhagavatam often says the demigods have come. The demigods also came to be engaged in his pastimes. So is there any description about, I mean, the demigods have achieved devotional perfection and now they're taking birth in the Boma Lila?
I'm not sure what you're asking, but as you were speaking, my thought went to chapter 35, where the gopis are pacifying Mother Yashoda, saying, "We know your anxiety because Krishna's late. Mothers who are expecting their children to come home, and they're late, they're in anxiety, are they okay? So you're in anxiety, but don't worry, here's what's going on." And then they describe what's going on. Before coming back, Krishna wanted to have the cows take some water, so they went to take some water in the river Jamuna. And then they wanted to play, and so they played in the river Jamuna, and they're sitting by the bank of the river Jamuna. And then they gathered up the cows and they're coming back. But on their way, the demigods came because they've been watching Krishna's pastimes the whole time. And they came, they landed in Braja to pay their respects. So Krishna can't just like dismiss the demigods. They're offering their respects to him. So consider that your son is very fortunate because he's getting the association of the demigods. So be patient. So now so that's just an example. They're still outsiders. Outsiders like Brahma in his prayers, wishing to take birth You know, he's at the you can't get any higher than Brahma in the universe. And he's wishing to take birth somewhere, somehow in Braja, in his next life. So the hankering for life in Braja is part of attaining life in Braja as an eternal associate. So there, that much is there. And that, so that much is helping Brahma to go beyond being the most 100 lifetimes of flawless execution of Varnashram Dharma to higher than that. And that's, so he brought him to Braja so he could then go beyond his Brahma position as Akura, beyond his exalted position as a worshiper of Krishna as Bhagavan with all knowledge and all everything. Beyond that, so beyond Brahma, beyond Uddhava, so it's a stimulation and contemplation of the good fortune of the residents of Braja. So the demigods are in that kind of place. They're looking to the Aishwarya aspect of Krishna more than the Madhurya aspect of Krishna, but they're getting some perspective on the Braja Prem feature of Krishna, because he's the one that's come to relieve them of what they were afraid of, the demons. They were anxious that the demon should be killed, just like we heard this nice description when Agasa was killed. There was a festival all the way up to Tapaloka, not just the demigods in Satyaloka, up and up, and big noise and everything. So much so that Brahma heard all the clamor, and so he went, what's going on? And he saw it, he was amazed. So it's to help them in their position as demigods to go beyond being demigods. But they have their mood. They don't just quickly exit being demigods and become followers of the Brijvasis. But there's something that's been awakened. Okay. Shravan, yes, you're enthusiastic.
Maharaj, I would like to refer a pastime before I articulate my question. This pastime, a celebrated painting we often see.
Speak slowly.
Krishna sitting in the center and the cowherd boys in the concentric circles. They are feeling, oh, Krishna is just looking at me. So likewise, we hear the pastime of Krishna carrying Sridham on his shoulder after losing a game. So those activities are in related to only Nitya Siddhas, or someone who performs sadhana could also relate with this reciprocation?
I'm not sure what you're asking. You're not going to get that reciprocation level without being Shuddha Bhakta. So supposing you're not a Shuddha Bhakta. Just imagine not being not a Shuddha Bhakta. So then what? Is there some kind of reciprocation from Krishna? Well, not seeing that Krishna is looking at me only and feeling that. And that's not... The mixed devotee or in less than Shuddha Bhakta is not going to have that experience. If they do, if they have that, it's imagination. Krishna is looking at me only.
So my question was more towards, after a sadhana, Siddha attains to the perfection.
So then this, the cowherd boys, they're experiencing the same thing that Nitya Siddhas are experiencing. Because Siddha is Siddha. Krishna doesn't discriminate.
Thank you.
Over here. It's 8:30. We'll just take this last question and end.
Shri Swami,
The 23 verses that will be a chorus contemplation in terms of his anticipation of meeting Krishna. That contemplation, each of those contemplations would be classified as a kind of bhava.
Does one's contemplation determine which bhava one will experience? That's your question.
Does each contemplation, is it a bhava that's stimulating that continuous ecstasy?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Okay.
I'm asking.
I understand it's a difficult thing because I'm not absolutely clear on it, and that's why I'm proposing the question. The contemplation that was there on the part of Akura today, he's considering what has qualified him to have this great opportunity to see Krishna.
Yes.
Krishna come to his lotus feet.
Yes.
So he's contemplating, oh, was it the amount of charity I've performed, penances I've performed?
Yes.
So that kind of contemplation of activities he may have done in relation to Krishna, that is stimulating his continuous ecstasy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to establish.
Yes. Someone? Who?
Thank you, Maharaj. I guess I don't know the pastime so well, but I've seen
take the mask because it makes it easier to hear.
Sure.
You.
Thank you. I don't know the pastime so well, but I've seen photos of Akura carrying Krishna and Balaram, and he's leaving Vrindavan, and I was wondering why Akura is carrying Krishna and Balaram on his chariot.
Why?
Yeah.
Because Krishna wanted it. He's a pure devotee, and he only does what Krishna wants. Now, there's another side to what Krishna wants. Krishna wants to stay in Vrindavan. And Akura is taking him away from Vrindavan. So he's not doing what Krishna wants. But that there's a tension in pure devotion. And that is to say, part of the big picture of Krishna's lila, the big picture, is the mood of separation. And those who are creating this separation are instruments of Krishna stimulating the mood of separation. So he's doing what Krishna wants. He's stimulating the love of the residents in Vrindavan by taking Krishna from Vrindavan, so that the mood of separation can rise. He's an instrument of Krishna's will. Although Krishna wants to stay in Vrindavan, so he stays in Vrindavan. He never leaves, you know that one. So how does he stay in Vrindavan? He enters into the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. He hides himself that way. Not just Paramatma, but Shamsundar hides himself in their hearts, and they can't stop thinking of him. And that way they're always with him in the mood of separation. Here's something very interesting, related. There's two situations. This is Ramayana. You're a little familiar with Ramayana. So one of the situations in Ramayana, there's a nice Sanskrit word, yadrichchaya. Yadrichchaya means somehow, no apparent cause, just somehow or other, yadrichchaya. So that in Ramayana, this is from the acharyas that comment on Ramayana. Valmiki uses that word yadrichchaya only twice in the whole Ramayana, and one is when Kaikeyi decides to banish Ram. And Bharat becomes the king. He uses the word yadrichchaya, And the acharyas say that somehow, the inexplicable somehow, is that Ram within her heart inspired her to do that. To banish him. And there was different reasons. The sorrow of separation from Ram and his going to meet the sages in the forest and give them his personal association, because if he stayed in Ayodhya, all those sages out there would not have had his association, and they were very eager for his association. So he made the arrangement for his association. For 11 and a half years, he was just going from ashram to ashram and giving his personal association. He didn't kill any demons. He just did that. Yadrishchaya, inspired by Ram within her heart. And then the second is when Shuparnakha decides to accept Ram somehow or other. That was inspired by Ram within her heart. For what reason? So we could get on to the next thing, killing of demons. She did what she did, inspired by Ram to do what she did. She's not a pure devotee. Far from it. But he inspired her to be an instrument for his pastimes. So same. Krishna inspired Akura to do what he did. He did what Krishna inspired him to do. And then there's all kinds of things that happen after that, including he got cursed by the gopis. And he had to undergo what they cursed him to do. And he accepted. And Krishna didn't. Anyway, it's very fluid and very mysterious, very dynamic, very ecstatic. And sometimes it looks sad. And the old finger pointing. Look what you did, Akura. You caused these Brijvasis all the suffering and anguish. You're going to get it. You can't do that to the Brijvasis. Not just the gopis, all of them. Big time consequence. You're going to get it. Okay? Krishna wanted. Right? Last question.
Because I totally understood your response to my question, but I found a verse that I was referring to, if you had some insight.
Good.
This is in the killing of Pralambasura.
Pralambasura.
Yeah, Shukadeva Goswami says, O king, demigods disguise themselves as members of the cowherd community. And just as dramatic dancers praise another dancer, worshipped Krishna and Balaram, who were also appearing as cowherd boys.
Well, yes. Partial expansions of the demigods participated in a similar, my understanding is, in a similar way as Drona and Dara. They didn't hand out, taking a vacation, going to Krishna Loka to take part in Krishna's pastimes. It's expansions of them under the instruction of Lord Vishnu to Brahma, tell them to take birth on earth. And some of them took birth in other places, in the Vrishni and Yadu dynasties. Some of them in this case. But they're, this is my understanding, partial expansions like Drona and Dara. Yeah, but there, it's not, it's exceptional. Like Drona and Dara, it's exceptional. But they, Drona and Dara, according to our acharyas, they under the order of the Supreme Lord, they expanded themselves, Nanda and Jasoda, expanded themselves into those two. And then within the heart of Drona and Dara, they had a certain desire at a right time. And Brahma blessed them. So be it. So now, what about the demigods that took the position of partial expansions, entering into the bodies of different cowherd boys, etc.? What were they before then? And were they expansions of those eternal Nitya Siddha cowherd boys? Or there's no explanation, so we don't need to spin our wheels. But somehow there's some connection to Krishna's eternal pastimes, and somehow they're getting the good fortune. But Drona and Dara, they're not, they're living the lives as Vasus. They're not eternal associates of Krishna in their mini expansions in the heavenly kingdom. How that connection works, I don't know. But somehow, under the order of the Lord, and it's like it's part of the mystery of all of this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.